When it comes to that clitoris discussion, I almost was like, it could be within the sort of compliment sandwich report, but it also could be like, hey, like before we get any further, I just put your fucking vagina by his face and just be like, the bitch is here.
You're listening to Sex with Emily. I'm Dr. Emily, and I'm here to help you prioritize your pleasure and liberate the conversation around sex. When it comes to your sexual style, have you ever thought about your voice? Do you moan, slow things down, pitch up or down an octave? Actor, writer, and director Lake Bell is obsessed with the human voice. On today's show, we'll discuss her new audiobook, Inside Voice, which explores this obsession, including the sexy baby voice phenomenon, which happens to be her least favorite choice for bedroom talk. We also discuss dating in your 40s and why things often get better with age when it comes to the pursuit of romance. All this and more with my amazing guest, Lake Bell. Intentions with Emily. For each episode, I want to start off by setting an intention for the show, and I encourage you to do the same. Well, my intention is to help you listen to your voice with less judgment and allow it to be its authentic self, both in and out of the bedroom. Please rate and review Sex with Emily wherever you listen to the show. My article, Ask Emily, How Do I Get Better at Dirty Talk, is up at sexwithemily.com. Check out my YouTube channel, social media, and TikTok. It's all at Sex with Emily for more sex tips and advice. If you want to ask me questions, leave me your questions or message me at sexwithemily.com/askemily or call my hotline 559-TALK-SEX or 559-825-5739. All right, everyone, enjoy this episode. Okay, real talk. We all have embarrassing moments in the bedroom. You know, like gas, bloating, indigestion, and more. And I hear from so many of you with stomach issues, and it's keeping you from the pleasure you so rightly deserve. Well, I got some great news. While studies show that gut issues directly impact our arousal, erections, and overall sexual health, I got a game changer for your overall wellness. Introducing Just Thrive Probiotic. It is my secret weapon for overall health and the fuel for my sex life. Just Thrive Probiotic isn't just any ordinary probiotic. It is a clinically proven game changer, a gut superhero designed to up-level your passion and sex life. So no more embarrassing moments, only a life of gut-powered ecstasy. That sounds good, right? It's the first probiotic formulated with four ancestral survival strains, clinically guaranteed to reach your gut 100% alive. This probiotic is like your personal gut gardener, maintaining the health of your gut by eliminating bad bacteria that causes all those digestive issues and replenishing the good, making it a game changer for your digestion, your immune system, your skin, and even your mood. With Just Thrive, you'll nourish your gut microbiome, fueling your mind, body, and soul. So say hello to increased libido, enhanced pleasure, and a whole new level of satisfaction. Oh, don't miss my episode, Why Gut Health is Sexy with Tina Anderson, where you can learn more about this groundbreaking company. For a limited time, you can try Just Thrive 100% risk-free by visiting justthrivehealth.com and enter promo code SEXWITHEMILY at checkout to save 20% off on a 90-day bottle of Just Thrive probiotic. So take charge of your gut health, take charge of your sex life, and live your healthiest life yet with Just Thrive. Lake Bell is an actor, director, writer, and voice obsessive. Her new audiobook, Inside Voice, My Obsession with How We Sound, is an auditory exploration of how this piece of our identity serves as an x-ray of our personal histories. Featuring iconic voices and a range of experts, including yours truly, Inside Voice goes deep on what is arguably our most undervalued personal trait. Follow Lake on Twitter and Instagram at Lake Bell. And download her new audiobook, Inside Voice, on Audible, Apple Books, Libro.fm, and Pushkin.fm. So, Lake Bell, we talked. I think you messaged me and you said, I'm doing this audiobook, you know, Inside Voice, about your obsession with voices, which we'll get into. You said, I want to talk about the sexy baby voice, which is like that voice, which I just think you gotta do it for us right now.
So just to help contextualize to all of the lovely listeners, which I am one. The sexy baby vocal affectation is the one that is quite prevalent in pop culture. You hear it a lot on reality shows and whatnot. You know, I sort of coined it just to kind of help categorize it in a quick way, right? So you go, okay, there's something kind of sexy about it, but then it's also kind of infantile as well. So those two things concurrently dancing together in the affectation. So it's pitch, which is way up there. So it's really high. And then it's vocal fry. And then it's also up talk. And so it's sort of like, that looks good on you. And so that thing, which I find fast, like truly extraordinary, which kind of like started, and I talk in the book how it kind of like, it seeded maybe from a place just in terms of pop culture, from like kind of a Marilyn Monroe version. But even before that, the precursor being kind of like Betty Boop, right? Who's very sort of sexualized, but it's also kind of like intended for kids. So it's like a confusing no-fly zone kind of. So that going to kind of the Marilyn sound, which is very breathy, you know, oh, Piggy, you know, and then going up to Paris Hilton, who's like OG, you know, like OG quintessential, that's hot, you know, that's like that badass kind of like pop culture reference that's almost exclusively voice. Sure, there's also visuals, visual component, but the voice is quite extraordinary.
Well, you know what really made me think about this, because I listened to your whole book, which I think everybody should do, Inside Voice. It's an audiobook, which I can just tell you put so much heart and soul into it, but this has been your passion. What I gathered was just that there's all these things that go into our voice, that you're collecting things from your, like everything that you pick up along the way about where I grew up, how my parents talk, where I spent my summers. And it's funny, doing this job for as long as I have, I never really thought about my voice. And I would love to know more.
You have such a beautifully unique voice in that you have a rasp and a quality to it that I find very sexy. And I think that a lot of people probably find it sexy. So it's very fitting to be able to ingest the information and the kind of education that we get from your podcast, but through this voice that feels like, well, I'm an authority on this because, I mean, God just listened to me, you know, like, I mean, with a voice like this, you can imagine that I know what I'm talking about. I do think that sexy voice in general, if you take out the baby aspect of it, sexy voice is an interesting discussion point. It's surprising because, you know, women have a different thought, like they're thinking what they think a female sexy sound is different than perhaps maybe a man. If we, you know, talking about voice, we do kind of traverse some kind of gender territory. And in the book, obviously, you know, we really get into that.
I think a lot of people haven't maybe thought about how they are changing their voice. Is there certain people that you're with where you lower your voice? Or if you're on a date or you're in a business meeting, or how do you, or maybe, or should we? Because I'm such a like learner. I'm like, should I be doing that? Should I know more? Like, should I be more conscious of it? Like, would you say this is something that the takeaway, I mean, besides just being fascinating to think about your voice now, is something else that we is uniquely ours?
When you're like, okay, I'm going on a date. I'm going to meet someone. I'm going for a job interview. Okay. I'm meeting someone for the first goddamn time. You have an opportunity here to, sure, choose your outfit, your hair, your makeup, how you present visually, and then how you present vocally. Are you a person who is going to authentically arrive with your sound as it fell off the truck as who you are? And are you connected in your breath? Do you allow for your sound to be something that you find satiating and pleasant, that you're not going to self-loathe and criticize the sound of your own voice? Because we're very disassociated with it. And then when we hear it, we dislike it. And so that I found so curious. And when you're thinking about meeting someone for the first time and sending a good impression, that's when we start to put on airs, right? You might lower your voice. You might heighten it a little bit. If you feel like you're in that gendered kind of bubble and you feel that if you have to be feminine or in touch with your feminine and you want to send that message, you know, you might speak a little higher and you might be a little softer and think about your musicality. And then if you feel like you need to command an entire room of people, you might lower your register. What I find inherently interesting about that is like, well, I fucking like the lower voices in women. And I find that sexy. I feel sexy in my low voice, in my lower register. I love Lauren Bacall. I like Kathleen Turner's voice. You know, it's like, these are the voices that I found really sexy and powerful. But that said, you know, there are certain female voices and female sounds that are higher in register that, you know, could totally be a turn on. It's not exclusive. It's not linear. It's not in a box, you know?
Yeah. Well, what I love about this is what I do, but I never really thought about the lowering and the changing my voice, which all I know for me, I really need to slow it down a lot. Like I talk really fast. And then when I slow down and I breathe, that's when I feel the most embodied and the most present and the most myself. I actually think that it's the most powerful thing that we can do. And I've taken classes and I dabble in breath work, but I found that it's been the most transformational work that I've done is like serious breath work.
I might even say that hydration falls in there too. It sounds so dorky, but I think that in voice work, when we talk about connected sound, it really needs to be clear that if you have a high-pitched voice, that's nothing to be ashamed of. I'm not poo-pooing anything. I love voices. I like me some deep regional voices. I like some high-pitched, unique voices. I like a sibilance. I love an affectation or like an, if I hear someone with a strong lisp, I'm like, wow, how fantastically unique. The voice has so much character. And frankly, I've ironed out, and I talk about this in the book, but I've ironed out my New York sound based off of my own upbringing and certainly the culture that was around me. That's a socially learned thing to get rid of, quote unquote, your accent, to iron things out. People do it often. But if I had any hope and dream when it came to inside voice, I hope you'd think, okay, so the message here is A, stay regional, stay true to your roots, don't iron shit out. Stay true to your eccentricities and your uniqueness in your sounds. And then additionally, breathe more, drink more water, and then on top of it, be a better listener. I give myself that task as well.
Most of us, as you say, and it's true, we don't want to even listen to the sound of our own voice. We have such disdain, but yet we care about all these other things like our outward appearance and how we show up, but our voice is showing up wherever we go, but we don't want to hear it. And so that's kind of have some other repercussions on us, but we don't even realize it. What is that about? The fact that we just don't love our voice.
Well, what you're hearing, what you hear as you speak, and as I speak right now, I'm listening to my voice, but I'm listening it through my skull. And my skull is made up, obviously, our skulls are comprised of all these bones. And so the sounds are bouncing off of the eardrums and the bones in the skull. And so it sounds more resonant. It is totally altered what your ear is hearing. So that when you play it back, it's going to sound like a different person to you. And so people get really squeamish at the fact that that doesn't sound like how I think I sound, right? And so then it becomes kind of disorienting. And I think therefore a bit of there's disdain.
But after you listen, it's almost like exposure therapy that I always tell people to do. Like, for example, you don't love your body. Look in the mirror. Look at your body naked. Talk about things you love about it. I think that there would really be beneficial for people to have some exposure therapy with their voice. Like, take a listen to it. What can you learn from it, right?
Yeah, you're kind of doing that to yourself because you are, as a podcaster, you're listening to your voice all the time. I care for my voice. I don't have negative feelings about it, but in the process of making this book, I'm really listening to it. And I'm in the studio and I'm having to do hours and hours and hours. And sure, when I do a character or something, that's a character. So it's not me. This is, really intimate, you know, really getting in there with my sound and starting to almost feel disembodied from it. And then, you know, I get back in it again, but I've had to train myself to, you know, have moments. I can have moments where I'm unkind, you know.
What about finding your authentic voice in the bedroom / dating? Is that something that you think about or that came up for you? Like, how do you actually know where you use that voice strategically?
I think we arrive in the bedroom thinking that it's this silent, nobody's really allowed to talk, and that it's somehow we've arrived in this like sensual time. And like in sexual, sensual time, there's nobody can talk about what happened. You just have to do what the things are, you know, and you should know what to do. And if you don't know what to do, well, then you're an idiot. So I found my new thing is trying to be like really just Lake. Don't leave Lake at the door of the bedroom. Like, stay in Lake, because Lake is the person who's arrived in this sexual experience. So Lake is a little meta, allowing for it to be in the room. Now, obviously, we don't need like a boner killer with me like doing a play-by-play. However, I will say that showing your partner out of the gate that you're comfortable vocalizing and using your real connected voice to say, like, I like that. Oh, do you like that? You know, that kind of like conversation, because obviously being sexual with someone is conversational in our bodies. So why not extend that to our sound? You don't have to have necessarily, you know, I'm not going to be like, hey, baby, like, let me, do you like that? You know, like, I'm not going to not sound like me, you know, but I'm also not going to be like, okay, here we go.
Right. Like, do the, like, you got a bullhorn. Like, people, how I assume it, I am when I have sex with someone, is like, aren't guys intimidated? I'm like, I'm not sitting there with a bullhorn going like, to the left, to the right, dude. Like, that's not my clitoris. What the fuck are you doing? Like, I don't do that. But people assume you have this voice that's very like authoritative in the bedroom. But again, you got to find your authentic voice. Like, who are you and what feels good to you? And
it's more about respect, isn't it? It's like, you gotta, I think I've learned that, you know, it's like feedback is great as long as it's really couched in love and respect. This is showing the other person that you're confident enough and excited to have a great experience with them. And here's how we can do that. Like, it's based in playfulness and curiosity, in presence. You could tune out and not be present and then not say anything. But I think that being vocal is cueing to the other person that you're present.
Yeah, exactly. And that is a practice. Like, there's so many people who are like mute to the bedroom. I often hear this too, more from vulva owners who like don't want to say a word. They don't know how to, you know, they just feel some shame around it. And I just always tell people to practice, like practice outside the bedroom. How would it even feel to start to moan or start to feel yourself like when you're masturbating? So I think there's nothing like being in the bedroom with someone when they're not making any noise. You're like, are you alive? Are you enjoying this? And sometimes when I'm getting even distracted, like in the moment or when I'm having sex, which still happens to me, everybody, I still get in my head. I'm still worrying about shit in the bedroom. But what I would say to my partners is I'll just be like, okay, babe, we got to stop, breathe. And we'll literally look at each other, stop everything. And then just like take a few deep breaths, maybe 5 deep breaths. And you immediately reset. And then I think you've fewer worries and you can start from where you're at.
That's a hot tip, actually. I like that. They're like, oh, okay, she wants to be really present. And she's also calling herself out, so I don't have to.
Right. I call myself out all the time, maybe to a fault, but I'm like, that was me. That was my bed. I'm like, babe, I was distracted. I missed the whole thing. Like, you're already down. We're already down my pants. I'm naked. I don't know what happened here. Let's just stop. And I'll be like, can we reset? What happened? Did we have fun? Was I having fun? Let's reset.
When you're in a relationship, in a committed relationship, there's a trust. And so, and there's a little bit of autopilot that we're all guilty of where you're like, okay, like, you know, the kids are in bed, like this is our moment. Okay, go through the motions. And like, yes, I know how he likes this and I know how he likes that. And she knows I like that. And you're in a safe place, but you're like, am I feeling pleasure and presence in this moment? And you're like, maybe not.
That's exactly it. You get into the motions and you just got to kind of reset.
And also, Emily, it's like that thing. It's really nice to hear that maybe you're not in the mood right now. The beauty of you being like, we started the party and like now I'm kind of like, I realize I'm not into it right now. You know what I mean? Love you. I know. Well, let's reprise at another time.
But like, I also want to talk to you about this. So dating in your 40s and what that's like. We also put it out to our listeners and want to get to that in a second about what they said. Cause I was like, let's just ask them what they think and we could talk more. But when you're dating, how important is voice? Like, do you hear someone's voice right now? Do you check them out in an app? Like, is that, could that be a deal breaker? Is it something that you think that we should be looking at as well?
For me personally, I'm so sorry, but it is really important. I can just be attracted to someone based off their voice alone. I can be repelled by someone's voice a lot. So I have that. And I know that's not everyone, but you know, we all have our things. It is less about looks for me, frankly. Like, I don't care what size, shape, or whatever you are, but the voice is big for me. So if it's a confident and kind of unique voice, I'm listening. But it's also chemical, right? Voice has chemical flavors to it too. So you're like, ooh, I don't know why I like that. Sometimes it's nostalgia, you know, you're like, gosh, I feel so safe and comfortable with this person because you're not realizing it, but they sound exactly like your favorite teacher in junior high or whatever. You know, you don't know what it is, but there's something there. Sometimes other things are at play.
Is this something that's always been important to you with the voice, or is it more like so lately with age? Like, how have things changed?
I have to be honest. So voice has always been a factor for sure. Like I cannot be attracted to someone sexually if I'm not into their voice. And that has been from a young age to now. I just imagine that will continue. And I'm like, is that kink? No, I'm like that I have like voice obsessive.
It's a deep wisdom of knowing yourself, of knowing also that it's okay. Like there's certain things that I know that need to be okay. Like someone who's, you know, passionate about things in life, someone who knows themselves, somebody who is more positive than negative. You know, there's all these things. And I think the more we embrace it and say, this is what I want, it makes it a lot easier. So you're not, I mean, that's part of the wisdom of dating in your 40s. I actually put it out to my listeners and I want to see if you agree with some of these things. I just said, like, what are the pros to dating in your 40s? And what are the cons? And like, tell me if there's any of these you want to like press a pin and you're like, oh yeah. Okay. So this is what people said. And we had some themes. You have higher standards. You're less willing to tolerate nonsense. You're quicker to call a stop to it. It's so much fun. I'm thankful I get to date now that I really know myself. I'm confident in my body. I don't take bullshit.
I would say this. Okay. All of these are kind of the same. They fall under a similar umbrella, which is you're dating as a more evolved you. So I concur. You are less likely to put up with bullshit, but that's because you are less likely to put up with your own bullshit and will call yourself on those things. So you're aware of all of your warts and you are dealing with them actively or have gotten through some of them. So you arrive at someone else's personship and you are standing in front of them as being like, I know what my shit is. And then you get to, if someone is like, oh, I don't know, I'm still vacillating between like my youth and like man child, I'm like, yeah, it's not gonna work out. I just don't have any time for it. I'm not interested in it. I'm a grown ass woman and I'm not apologizing for it. And I also feel like I always was kind of excited to get to be 40. I remember people being nervous about turning 30. And I was like, I feel like I've always been 30. And then finally, when I was 30, I was like, yeah, I know. And then at 40, I was a little like, I was scared. You know, I think that there's something, poor women, like we really get it so hard. And we really get in our head about that 40 sound, you know, and same with 50. But I think 50, everyone gets over it by that point. But 40, ugh.
I mean, 40's hard, but then you're 50. And then you wish you were 40.
My mom says 50 is the best. My mom is like, you don't even know how good it's gonna get.
I love you.
And I was like, okay. I mean, she didn't do it like that. She's very soft-spoken. But the point is, I
hear her now in my head. It's true. When we return, you'll hear more of my conversation with Lake Bell. So don't go anywhere.
I just feel like the dating in your 40s is so freeing because you are in a situation where you're like, oh, I've already done so much hard work and I am going to continue to do so, but I'm aware that I'm continuing to do so and I'm not ashamed of it. It's very sexy when someone else is like, oh yeah, I am acutely aware of all of my stuff and I am actively addressing it.
People who've done their work, right? People who actually know who they are. They're not just sort of trying to figure out who they are. And like you were saying earlier, like they've got one foot in like their childhood, like maybe I want to do this and maybe I want to do that. At this point, they already know I am challenged around commitment or I'm challenged around whatever. Like just say it.
Yeah. Or on the path, because you don't have to know who you are, period. You have to be like actively working. For me, that's me. I'm like, you have to be like acutely aware because frankly, we should be so lucky that we get to continue to discover and evolve throughout all these fucking decades.
You're right. You're on the journey because you never get there. You're never there, but it's always a journey. But at least they're on, they've taken the step on the path.
I mean, aging is a privilege because you know what? The opposite of aging is dying. That would suck. So who cares? You got some gray hairs. you know, your skin, you got to constantly deal with the goddamn skin and all this shit. And you just have to stay on top of your own, you know, love thyself, you know, kind of thing, so that you're not beating yourself up.
And I wouldn't want to go back in time either. I don't want to be any of those ages at all.
You're like the hottest you've ever been. Let's be honest.
I feel like I am so much more complete than I've ever been in all the areas. Going back to our listeners, a lot of people want to know about dating with kids. They want to know, what about single with kids? How to navigate a single dad that can only get together once a week? Are you dealing with that now?
Yes, and it's fabulous because thank God I love dating people with children because I'm like, they won't be available sometimes. And that is joyous. Like you get to date and be like, hey, guess what you're going to do during the times that he's busy? You get to do shit for you. Being unavailable is beautiful intermittently for me in a relationship. I cannot have someone who is like all over my shit, trying to move in, like the whole thing. By the way, I understand the terms can always change. I might meet someone and go like move in right away. Like, but I also think that in this time in my life, I'm very much attracted to people who are really standing on their own two feet and responsible and generous to themselves too. Like they are doing their work, as we keep bringing up. They're doing their work. They're actively doing it. And part of that is maintaining being a good parent and doing their share in their other relationship, which is with their baby mama, right? I'm really into that. If they have like a good relationship with their ex, I'm like, that's hot.
I'm in that situation now too. I'm like, it's amazing when the ex is happy. Like you want them to have a good relationship and they get along. Like that is the best case scenario.
I just want to admit that, yes, I understand that it is it's a tough pill to swallow. Like if you have a very challenging relationship with your ex and then the person you're dating has like a dreamy relationship with their ex, it's disorienting. However, if you zoom back and you look in, you go, oh my God, thank God I'm not dealing with a crazy person. On both sides. Like, so you just look at it like that, allow yourself to just be like, it is a blessing, but I do respect and understand the perspective because I was in a rapport at one point, a relationship where like the guy I was dating was kind of like, oh, I don't understand how it is that you and Scott are so awesome and comfortable and friends. And I was like, how? And I just realized, oh, he doesn't have that. So it feels very like foreign. I really respected that. I can't kind of say, don't you get it? Just fucking get it. You know, it's like, that's not nice. That's not sensitive because it's hard. It's very hard to understand if you don't have it, but it totally exists.
Exactly. And maybe you can inspire him that it's possible. Cause I think that that's kind of a newer-ish thing. I don't know. My parents will get that when they're divorced, they got along, but I think now we're seeing it more than ever, but gosh, hopefully you love this person. You want the best for your kids. Hopefully you can have a positive relationship with them, at least work on it.
Lastly on that, I just would say if you're dating someone and you're like in a situation where your relationship with your ex is just looking real shitty comparatively to them and their ex, and it's really disheartening, the person you're dating will probably be supportive. Don't look away from that support. Because I remember trying to support the person I was with and say like, hey, let me be a teammate in you and your ex. It's only weird if you make it weird. You're just doing it for the kids anyway. And frankly, you're doing it for all of you because whether you like it or not, you're all in a relationship of some extended, it just is what it is, right? Like my parents are divorced and we're all like when someone gets married or there's a graduation, it's like, they're all fucking there, you know, all the remarriages. So we're all in it together, guys. So if we could just not fight, that would be, I think, better for our blood pressure.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think that's just the more of the modern way too, right? It's not just this linear, you know, family. I think that a lot of us have the exes and the things around it. The more you can handle that. And that's the stuff interesting to test in the beginning. Okay, so we get a lot of emails, as you know, but we also get some voicemails. And I thought because you are the voice expert, aficionado, this is your passion, we brought some voicemails. And I thought it could just be interesting to get your perspective too and see how we can answer this question. Well, this is Amanda, and she's 35, and she lives in the West Coast.
Really struggling with this off and on relationship. Finally met someone that I feel like I have a perfect connection with. We love to do all the same things. Sex is unbelievable, the best I've ever had. Really intimate connection, deep. But the one glitch is that this person, male, not interested likely in having children in the future, and I myself don't want to take that off the table. So both of us are having a really hard time trying to figure out whether to continue to explore this relationship or let it go based on our long-term goals, even though we really care about each other. Just looking for any advice that might help us navigate this, whether we should let it go or whether we should, you know, continue to explore and have more conversations and see what happens. Thanks so much, Emily. Your show's awesome. Love listening to it. Take care. Bye.
All right. Aww. I know. Okay.
So sweet. Okay. I like it because I think out of the gate, I can tell, you know, I mean, first of all, you're 35 years young and I do hear you. I think women, especially at 35, are kind of like, what am I going to do if I haven't had kids yet? Like, yeah, this is it. The genuine truth is like, I guess I had my first kid at 35 and then my second at 37. But it's kind of like my buddy just had a baby. She's 41. I don't know. You know, if you could take the baby out of the conversation, unless she's secretly kind of wanting it like tomorrow, I feel like there's enough there to stick with it.
Yeah. But to me, I guess I feel like at this age, as you get 35, you get a bit, like in my 20s, I could date the people that were so wrong for me for years. Like,
You're right.
But I'm like, I'll date this DJ for as long as I want to. It's be a good time. But it wasn't right. And it didn't, you know, I had more time. But
girl, you're right.
This is what I want. I actually want kids and you don't wait around for them to change.
You're so right. Because here's the deal. What I like about, I think I initially went, oh, because she sounds really young to me. Her voice sounds really young. But 35, you get to definitely stamp yourself a woman, a grown woman, which is nice, grown-ass woman, you know, own it. And then I hear you and I feel convinced because what I like what she did was advocate for herself. She said what she needs. That's so fucking hard for women sometimes. They're like, hey, I would like to have children like soon. That's such a hard, hard conversation that she had to have. I give him props for being, you know, honest and saying, you know, I really don't think I want children, because that's also a difficult thing to say out loud. You know, it's like, I definitely don't need someone to take care of me financially. I just want to make sure that they can financially take care of themselves. You know what I'm saying? They don't feel like they're on the ups and figuring out their, you know, place in the world.
That's very helpful. Let's do one more. This is from Sarah, 31 in Washington, D.C.
I've been in a really amazing relationship for 2 years with my male partner, who is just so kind and loving, and he really turns me on a lot of the time. But since we first started dating, pretty much for the duration of our relationship, he has this kind of persona in the bedroom that feels really inauthentic. And I've noticed that I've kind of tried to guide him towards being a little more present when we're having sex. I've shown him how to touch my clitoris probably 100 times, and he just still doesn't get it. And my analysis is that he seems to just be really stuck in his head. I'd love your advice for how to work on our sex life, and maybe I need to stop being so prescriptive about what he might need to be more present. Okay, thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Emily, go. I'm so curious to hear what your point of view is on this, because I know this. I've been in a similar scenario, so go.
Oh my God, I wish you guys could see Lake's face. She's like nodding, going, yes, I get this.
Yes, yes. I'm so glad for this question.
I mean, I want to hear this too, because basically she says she's been dating this guy. She's 31. She says it feels very inauthentic in the bedroom, which is just interesting to think of, like, what inauthentic, and I think it's probably not present.
I think it's this. She's saying he has a persona, a sex persona. So like, for instance, they're awesome. They're fun. They're having a great time. You know, they're sexually attracted to each other as well. But his sort of like sex presence, his sex character that he likes for him is kind of like put on. And so for her, she's going, oh, I don't recognize that guy as much. That's not the guy who's just hanging out with when we were having dinner. It's kind of quasi porn related. But in my view, I've always been like, this is making them feel hot, you know? And yet she's sort of like, how do I say it in a way that's not like totally bursting the bubble of the guy who's like, dude, I like that fucking poor nasty guy who comes into, like, that turns me on, you know?
Right. This is your turn on. So it sounds like to me that this is like conversations that happen outside the bedroom about their sex life. It's been 2 years. So I think it's like, it's almost like a state of the union. It's like a state of your sex union. And I think that every couple needs to have this, the sooner the better. Maybe you bring in some highlights, like your company report at the end of it, like a quarter.
Highlights, company report.
We hit our numbers. I had orgasms. You had orgasms. Like, this is great. But areas to improve is, you know, no, I think it's like, this is what you love. You talk about the highlights. It feels so connected. These are the things I like. And I just want to talk about like what's happening in the bedroom, because sometimes I would say, like, I feel like when you show up as this certain way where I know that you seem so embodied and it seems like it's such a turn on and it's hot to see you that turned on, babe. However, there's something about it that feels like we're having someone else here and I don't think I called for a threesome yet.
Do you feel that like men who have watched a lot of porn, they do kind of think, oh, that's now my turn on. Like I now am kind of programmed.
Absolutely. I do think that also for many vulva owners too, the guys are with them and they're like, I swear to God, she's coming in. It looked like she was reading a script or trying to be like a porn star the way she was moving, but it wasn't real. And I think the same thing goes for guys, because I think that if you look at this, if it's the only way that they're having sex mostly, like the most of the sex they've seen, maybe they learned about it, you know, they learned watching porn. And so if all you've been seeing is the input of porn, this thing's happening, he's choking her, then he says this thing, you bitch, get on your knees, like that's what you do. I don't even question it. And it might've been an integration that was sort of subliminal that they didn't even realize. And so maybe when Sarah points it out to him, he'll be like, oh, I didn't even know that. Like I guess for me, you want to be people that are self-aware too. I would love that to be a great note to everybody, like be with someone who can take feedback, who genuinely wants to be open, because the people are going to be like, not able to take feedback is not your partner, I think.
I think that what you said really was really wise is like when you do your conversation that you always start, even when I'm like writing a script or something and someone's giving me notes or I'm giving someone else notes, you always start with the positive. I know that's a really basic thing, but really don't forget it. You start with the sugar. So when you're saying all the good stuff and I love that, you know, it can be sexy and great. And then just genuinely like feedback about the other things that you'd love to talk about. And you know that it's a flow back and forth. You tell me stuff too.
Such a good reinforcement here. It's like the compliment sandwich, like say something nice, give something complimentary, give the feedback. Like it's nestled in between two, you know, compliments. And then you end it with like all the things you love. And then just to address really quickly her orgasm part. She said, I've sort of shown him my clitoris 100 times and he doesn't get it. I think that that's also confusing for people when we're like, I've told my partner 1,000,000 times. And I think this would be another thing to bring up outside the bedroom. You could say, you know, I've brought up this a lot, like how important it is for me to have clitoral stimulation. And I realize it's not really happening that much. And I'm just curious. I'd love to know more about that. Is it that maybe you're not really sure how I like to be touched? Could I show you more where the clitoris is? And maybe sometimes our partners need education. Like literally for so many vulva owners, you're not going to have arousal. You're not going to have an orgasm. You're not going to feel attached to your partner if they're not doing things that genuinely, authentically, and really like it's a requirement for many of us that we need that stimulation. So I think letting him know that like, which part of clitoris didn't you understand?
When it comes to that clitoris discussion, I almost was like, it could be within the sort of compliment sandwich report, but it also could be like, hey, like before we get any further, I just put your fucking vagina by his face and just be like, the bitch is here. This is her. And I'll just like touch myself while I touch you, you know, or something. It could be like in the room a little bit, you know?
No, I love that because I'm a huge fan of mutual masturbation. And so, because then you get to learn and it's hot. You could be like, give him a hand job. And you could be like, while I'm doing that, or while you're giving yourself a hand job masturbating, I'm going to show you how I touch my clitoris. Because then they're learning like, oh, I didn't get it. This is what you do. So there's a lot of workarounds. I wouldn't assume here that he's totally ignoring her because you told him 20 times, but sometimes it's harder to move along. This is so good, Lake. This is very, very helpful. I could do these with great. You all day. I know.
I know. I'm like, this is great. This is just like girl talk.
It's really fun. That's what we love. Okay. But like, I'm going to ask you the 5 questions we ask all of our guests. They're quickies. Okay. So just whatever comes to your mind. What's your biggest turn on?
Confidence.
Biggest turn off?
Pushiness.
What makes good sex?
Safety.
What's something you would tell your younger self about sex and relationships?
Speak up.
What's the number one thing you wish everyone knew about sex?
It's a physical conversation. It's not a one-sided monologue.
I love that. So good, Lake. Thank you so much for being here. Tell everyone where they can find you, where they can find your audiobook. It is such a great listen, everyone. I highly recommend it.
Join me in listening to Inside Voice on Audible or Apple Books or Libro or anywhere audiobooks are sold.
That's it for today's episode. See you on Friday. Thanks for listening to Sex with Emily. Be sure to like, subscribe, and give us a review wherever you listen to the podcast and share this with a friend or partner. You can find me on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Sex with Emily. Oh, I've been told I give really good email. So sign up at sexwithemily.com. And while you're there, check out my free guides and articles for more ways to prioritize your pleasure. If you'd like to ask me about your sex life, dating, or relationships, call my hotline, 559-TALK-SEX. That's 559-825-5739. Or go to sexwithemily.com/askemily. Special thanks to Acast for powering the Sex with Emily podcast. Was it good for you? Email me, feedback@sexwithemily.com.